Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
dolls and the science of dolls. Now, I suppose the overview is that any interest, I think, almost any interest that you have, stewarded well, will lead you into sort of the depths of humanity. And that's sort of an overpowering feeling I had when I met this, probably 19-year-old lady, probably four foot tall on a walking frame in an op shop. I was up at the village, Dop Village, with the chemist, a fairly big chemist, and getting a recharge and all the myriads of, not too many, there's only about four different types of medicines which I take. There's nothing too spectacular about them all. But after a while, you just take up your medicine bag, get them recharged. It's taking a few more minutes to go, and then I go and visit my favourite haunt, the op shop. And because it has things in it which are painfully kept, these items which are for sale that people have had decided not to even unpack, and then because it's packaged, they can't throw it out, and therefore they think after a while and they give it to the op shop. So these sets of blue plastic glasses, and there's one which is an electric drink warmer, that is, it plugs into your car and you can have a hot drink. Mad. There's all these things from the 60s in their boxes and stuff like that, brought along to an op shop. We call it an op shop, so where people donate it and the charity goes to buy food and clothing for disadvantaged people. So sort of just recycles, re-gifts it. And I met this lady here as I was whiling away a couple of minutes waiting for the medicine to come up. Be prepared. I'm doing this podcast while walking home, so I'm sort of just trying to mix as much physical exercise, podcasting, getting vital supplies. Of course, I've missed some vital supplies I was asked to get. This lady said, oh, I love op shops as well. They're my favourite things. And you can always start a conversation in an op shop by diverting it by saying, I love op shops. It seems to be a way to get almost anyone talking. And also, if you have a pile of shit that they really don't want, and you've got it there and you've been ordered to give it to the op shop, they say, oh, I love op shops. And they go, you do? Oh, yeah, they're great. And they just then take your rubbish, unfortunately. And sort of you've passed the problem. Yours is not to reason why. Yours is just to do as instructed. But she said, I like dolls. And I don't see many new dolls anymore, but I've bought lots of dolls at op shops, and occasionally I find them. And I asked her name, because it's a little bit intrusive, I think. I think you get to know people for a fair while, then you ask their name. It's a bit intrusive doing that, but she said, oh, I collect them. Did you know that when they went down to the Titanic, one of the things they brought up was the doll's head? And dolls have been with us, the human race, forever. And she said, I've got a large doll collection, and therefore I'm not going to give you too many. Look, I don't have enough details to know where she lives and all that type of stuff. And she said, I've got many dolls from the turn of the century. My oldest doll is a wax doll from 1848. bought out, and so it's a card on it. It's bought out by a wealthy family, the daughter of a wealthy family, and the idea, you just can't make out the ship's name, and you feel, oh, this has got so much history to it. Now, one of the things that sort of on a history thing is the bells, the significance of bells have sort of emerged recently. So there's a large, yesterday's ceremony, there was a bell there, the significance of various bells. They've cast an Anzac bell to toll out the, put a sound to the end of World War One, and there's sort of a very significant re-emergence of bells and things like that. And so there's a general interest, and people will be able to put this information together and possibly find out. But I asked, and she said that a lot of people look at this doll and get quite frightened, freaked out about it. Now, there is something, I suppose, to be said about dolls, in that there must be a culture and a custom with it, where you can actually, if you cross these cultural roles, it's called possibly the uncanny valley. There must be something. They don't look dead, they don't look alive, they do look like dolls, and their expression must be not of any fear or panic. There must be something, you know, but apparently this doll has crossed the line a little bit. Try not to get run over here. So she described it, and she said it's far back in ancient history they've found little bones with cloth wrapped around her, and the conversation turned really quickly about how corporations tend to pump out dolls of various sorts, and about the McDonald's toy dolls, and you know, people's ability to play with it. And she said, "Oh, the plastic doesn't last," and that this is indeed true. The older plastics become very brittle with age. I should imagine dull plastics, but there would be something for the actual mass production of dolls, where it's mass produced, so it becomes an icon, but also mass produced, so it's no longer a value. And we had sort of a little bit of conversation about how, before I had to go, how there is certain peacefulness about having an interest and exploring it, and not attaching values, not trying to tell too many people about it, but just contemplating it. And then she said, you know, dolls, unlike other collection things, are a representation of the human form. Yeah, this is pretty sophisticated stuff. And I actually did immediately think to the amount of human form we add to boxes to animate things. We either put animated cartoons or animated people on boxes to indicate use and occupancy and presence, in with it. And my thoughts expanded to the scientific aspect. Now, this is mirror neurons. That is that you have your sense of self, but you actually have a doll's house in your head, where you run people as a simulation in your head, and sort of part of that learning to do that is having dolls that do that, in terms of you play and act dolls, and playing dolls, you actually run... obviously, the doll has to be a concrete manifestation of your mirror neurons associated with it. And one of the things that we tend to do is that we sort of discuss and interplay the doll's houses in our heads and actually sort of basically have almost a drama happening in our heads. In fact, when we observe anything, ultimately when we're watching a movie, that movie projects into our mirror neuron. So people wince when the hero gets hurt, sense fear, all this type of stuff. So in a sense, if we were looking at it now, people would see, say, a small non-scale figure as a doll there, and you've got your sort of icons and little crucifixes, sort of dolls built up, and so was it Princess or Empress Irene who was into dolls and really connected with the iconoclasm. So Princess Irene is a Byzantine empress before Constantinople was finally crashed. And of course it sort of fell to, I think the, Crusades helped do it in as well as anything else like that. But there's these elements where dolls come through, and it's sort of a very interesting thing. I suppose I was interested in the you know, psychologically what happens to people, their interaction with dolls, and sort of the marketing aspect of dolls, like the Shopkins, the sort of scale, the teaching of scales with dolls, the overall teaching and thinking, and the sort of the surreptitious marketing of it. So people like to have sort of doll, I don't know what it is that they have, doll superheroes and doll presidents of the United States. It's just what it would be to actually produce a doll of a person. So ultimately, I can sort of see down the track, and this would really screw with people's minds, being able to walk into a place, be scanned three-dimensionally, and have a reasonably good 3D doll produced of yourself. That could be down the track, but I really wonder whether that sort of technology, which will eventually come along, will be really start to play with people's minds, because there seems to be an etiquette in that there are certain things which you can produce a doll of, but you really can't produce a... I suppose you've got toy soldiers and stuff like that, which has got a certain amount of violence in it. But I'm sure there's an etiquette about who can be made dolls, and it's a very important creation of dolls. So the Olympics have their mascots and stuff like that. They're full up things, and the people, I know with some more kids, not being able to tell that a person in a suit wasn't actually a real doll. So we have sort of this moving of dressing up, and where you dress up people and authority. So you have the same policeman, but if he's got his uniform on, you go there, and it's correspondingly, you can buy police doll sets, and there's a whole series of logic embedded into it. So that's just my overall sort of reaction. I suppose one reaction is to see in this world of very aggressive thinking, the person who can actually get on morning TV and sprout an idea, which may be just to buy a product, or you know, that they I was just trying to think, this person is a quiet person, had really got onto something, but society has really sort of walked on past, disregarded her, and the people they are regarding are peaceful people who are not necessarily useful to society, but useful for causes which are not necessarily the most well thought out and wholesome ideas, i.e. that you may espouse consuming something or supporting something or be involved or support a political thing, you will get a voice. And so you get a voice by actually getting the right label, but your content won't necessarily get through. And therein, it seems to be a sort of a direct thread and a theme of ideas. But this sort of the dolls, which are a sort of a literacy, a language, sort of not. It's sort of parallel, and it's not, well, I suppose there is art. It's not the public art, which is held at a distance and had to last. It's something interactive art, and it presupposes an ability to interact and animate and go in with it, and it shows a knowledge of our learning system. A small child goes through a sequence of attributing personality to things, sort of construction in the world, and it's sort of like a intellectual constructions tool for kids as they go up. And just go up this way, and it's fat, so I've got to get hit today, get a hard way straw. So you may be able to hear me breathing. I should actually get a reasonable pace up if this is going to be any worthwhile. It's actually quite burning hot here in the sun. Sun walking along. Yeah, so there's this sort of a like there's the physical interest and the intrigue. There's the anthropology. There's the neuroscience and education. There's a sort of cultural literacy associated with dolls, and the idea that it's the literacy that is important giving to people at a certain time. And I suppose what fascinates me is that it's sort of neglected literacy. We sort of hand over to commercial groups, but the ability to embed memories, create stories, integrate with music, and to create moralistic stories associated with Long's kids' construct, i.e. that the kids construct a literacy, a world within, with dolls, and to actually have some sort of understanding by sort of looking at, I know this is awful, but looking at the doll play and actually sort of not necessarily looking at it to intervene, but looking at it to understand what is the significance of people playing a certain thing, and whether you can actually pick out family stress or injustice. Does this actually come out in doll's play? Does a certain sort of dominance, and does the obviously playing with dolls, there's amusement, but there's also experimentation to solve problems, and it's that will be actually really fascinating to see how they solve problems and whether you could use it or how it integrates with musical and mathematical literacy. I know it sounds awful, but it's a generalized thing, and we sort of look at literacy on a linear path to do this and that, rather than looking at the literacy competency and actually what can integrate into it. So I'm thinking of reading through the back through this 1930s classic maths textbook, where instruction about how to teach maths by extending a doll's play area. You know, this is an insight back in this old book, and I don't know what it says to me, that the tendency to dismiss it out of hand, that is, to give enormous weight to the last in-service professional development I've had, and being able to promote that, and sort of thinking that people tend to promote ideas when really what they are trying to do is promote themselves through the promotion of ideas. And therefore you get this this overall practice of narrowing. And this is, I suppose, the overall insight, that dolls play can be looked at as an expansion mantra. I have to stop now as I'm going off to do this next task.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.